because my name is Dr. Jack Barlow. And I have tried to explain to one of them, and I want to explain to you all, that Ed Harlow is some perhaps 10 or 15 years older than I am, but we have been close friends ever since, almost ever since I was 10 years old. I've known Ed Harlow. And over the many, many years, he's been very kind and gracious in his friendship with me. Our paths have crossed many times. We both lived in the Toronto area for some years. And then more recently, I had the privilege a few years ago for CMML of visiting the northeastern Zaire area. And I was in Yinkundi when Dr. Harlow came through. Now, you've got to remember that Dr. Harlow was a missionary there years ago. Jack Barlow, nobody had heard of. We went over to Lawa. Bill Spees stood up Sunday morning for their gospel meeting. Almost 1,000 people there at Lawa at the assembly. And I was to speak through interpreter. He had the job of introducing me. Dr. Harlow was there as well. And I didn't understand Swahili, but I got the drift of it, because what he did, he said to them, "Now you all know Dr. Harlow. He's a missionary, he's an old friend, you've known him over the years. This is Barlow." And he had them all saying, "Harlow, Barlow." Can you imagine 1,000 people? It was very embarrassing. Several times. After he got through, he turned to me and made the tremendous blunder. He says, "I now introduce Dr. Harlow." So with that, we'll start. I'd like to mention I will be using overheads pretty well exclusively, perhaps giving some extra points to them. And I don't know to what extent some of the practical points here may be of value to anybody. If so, it's possible that they could be taken and photocopied onto black and white and perhaps made available to anybody who is interested. That's just to save you bothering to take notes if, in fact, you wish to. Now, the subject that was given to me this morning was building an interest in missions. And I was asked, and I think it was a very wise decision, if I would divide it into three segments. That is, giving a vision to young people, and then secondly, developing prospects. Thirdly, answering the questions and fears of prospects. Now, if you think about that, it looks as if there's an orderly progression down this way. Giving a vision, if you like, to all the young people in the local assembly. From those, there may be some who begin to show a spiritual keenness and desire, and these would be the prospects. And then, assuming that some of those were beginning to be committed in their own hearts and minds toward perhaps thinking the Lord had called them overseas to the mission field, how about answering the questions and fears of such people? And then this afternoon, just as a preview, qualifications and training of missionaries, and that again, it was thought desirable to divide into three major topics: the needed qualifications and training, the support and service or services of Christian missions in many lands, CMML, and how to handle unqualified applicants. Now, brethren, there are a couple of things I'd like to say before getting into methods and facts. And first of all, it's this. Despite everything we may talk about in terms of method or practicality or arrangement and everything else, it is God the Holy Spirit who is sovereign in giving visions to young or to old. He is sovereign in all the affairs of the local assembly. We can, hopefully, prayerfully, surrender to the Holy Spirit, seek by one method or another to put a vision before people. But we must remember the work is really the Lord. So please do not take anything I say as saying, you do this and it will work. These are practical suggestions along the line. God grant that young people will receive a vision. God grant that we may be able to give the vision. Another caveat, if I may, and that is that we use the word young people so largely, all of us do, in speaking about creating a missionary interest. And, of course, this is primarily because the young people still have the health and strength. There is a life before them, if God spares them for such, and we seek to attract them and give them a vision. But more and more today, we are seeing older people also going out to the field in one capacity or another. some upon retirement, and so on. So while my remarks are directed primarily to the young people, that is a vision for them, let's keep in mind as well that we're dealing with a vision for all of us. Again, the three topics for this morning: building, giving a vision to young people, developing prospects, and answering questions and fears of prospects. First of all, the first part of it then, giving a vision to young people, some simple suggestions. Any one of these points could well be enlarged upon if we had time. I'm sure you recognize that. Each of these is only really the tip of the iceberg for some 30 or 40 points perhaps that we'll be looking at. First of all, I always like to feel I say have a consistent program for the assembly covering missionary principles. You'll notice in parentheses there, I put the term 3 years. There's nothing magic about that. But isn't it true, dear brethren, that in the total life of the assembly, it has to be redone about every 3 years? You cannot assume that because dear brother so-and-so came through and gave a series on the tabernacle 10 years ago, that the generation now in their 20s were either present or understood it. It has to be done again. In fact, if a young person is 15 and at that point not really turned on for the Lord, perhaps from an assembly family and comes out regularly, much of what might be said might go over his or her head. But in 3 years, that person will be 18 and on the verge of perhaps being lost to the assembly. So that I feel whether it's missionary principles or anything else, we need really to have a consistent overall ministry year after year. And when I stress the principles here, I don't mean to the exclusion of other things. I mean everything associated with call, with surrender, with commitment, with the Lordship of Christ, with a surrendered life, and everything else that's part of the teaching of the local assembly, but particularly as it may have a bearing on a young person realizing what missions is all about. And then, of course, similarly, have a consistent program for the assembly covering missionary practices. The question of finances, the question of going out. How do we take the unchanging principles written in the scriptures 2,000 years ago for our edification and for our guidance, how do we take those unchanging principles and apply them practically to the world we live in 1987? There's the other side of it. The principles don't change. The practice has to be founded on the principle, but be valid for the day in which we live. And sometimes that's a hard thing to do, isn't it? And our young people need that as much as I do, perhaps, when I'm so much older. Something else that struck me in trying to give a vision to young people: always present missions as a worthy career. I know I'm using worldly terms, so you'll forgive me when I use something like career. Is it possible, dear brethren, and I'm looking back now to my childhood, is it possible that somehow or other in our assemblies, when the if we're entertaining a prominent speaker from the home field, or perhaps somebody, whether or not they're Christians, but somebody prominent as a local lawyer, a doctor, or whatever else it may be, or a man of substance, but then someday we tell our family, you better be good tonight, we're having that missionary in. And somehow or other, missionary doesn't sound like something which is edifying and honoring and worthwhile striving for. Over and over again, I ask people about their young people, their sons and daughters. Well, I hope so-and-so will be a nurse. I hope so-and-so will be a doctor. I hope so-and-so will be this career, that career. They're going through for mechanics and diesel or whatever it may be. And if the Lord calls them, they can use that. But I don't very often hear Christian parents saying, we are seeking to raise our children to go out to the mission field. Let us present missions and missionaries and the mission field and all that's entailed as worthy of the very best in terms of a lifetime career of service for the Lord. And I think we are sometimes there. Perhaps it's only my own fears. And then thirdly, or fourthly, which follows from C, treat the missionary as an honored guest. I've already implied that. I can speak from my own experience. You'll forgive me. Some of you older ones here may remember my father, Captain Barlow. I know Brother Horton does, and Les Rainey, and a few others that I've known over the years. Dad was associated with a shipping company And we grew up in New Jersey because he went into New York Harbor every day in connection with his work with a large shipping company. But Dad, before he came to New York, had been a sailor most of his life, both before and during World War I. He was born again at sea. He had a very great interest in foreign lands and in missionaries. And all these coalesced so that missionaries from the assemblies going out in those years by ship, going through the port of New York, Dad would have contact with them and seek to assist them and help them. Not only so, but he would bring them home for dinner or something like that. Often, the night before they were sailing overseas, perhaps to never come back for many, many years. The thing that has never left me, and I recommend it to you, dear friends, parents, elders, whatever it may be, as a little fellow, maybe, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old, whatever, so far back I can't remember, as a little fellow in those years, the one night I was allowed to stay up late was when we were having a missionary. That was the night. That was what Mother used to call a special treat. Jackie, you're going to have a special treat next Tuesday. Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so from China, China was open in those years, are coming through. They're on the way back to China, and you can stay up late as we talk around the supper table afterwards. They even held informal missionary meetings in our home, and that was another such occasion. Let us, dear brother and sister, present the missions as a worthy career and also treat the missionaries as honored guests in our homes and in our assembly fellowship. If we are looking at all our young people and have the young people do a special study relative to the missionary before he or she arrives. I'll use the he consistently here throughout, but of course it stands for both he or she or a couple, however, or a family as the case may be. But have the young people do a special study before the missionary arrives. If a missionary is coming from Medellin in Colombia, wouldn't it be worthwhile if the young people in the previous week in their young people's class, whatever names you call them nowadays, they always have some exotic names for the classes, are doing a study for a week or two on Colombia, on that mission field, on that missionary family, the whole background. That means that when the missionary does come and he mentions some of these things, the young people, at least in the audience, are well ahead of him and understand and can relate. It's very hard to relate. If someone came in today, Brother Fleming mentioned Aleppo in Syria. I think I'm right, it was Syria, wasn't it? I would have trouble with that. I know it's in Syria. I can't quite visualize that Mediterranean at the moment. But supposing as a young person, we'd had a real study on that. And when the missionary came from Aleppo, we would know his name, his wife's name, the children's names. We'd know where they were commended from. We'd know how many years have been out there. And he's up to a real head start. And the young people then will relate much better to him or to the family. Involve the young people during the missionary's visit. I don't know about you, but I've traveled to assemblies where perhaps I've been giving some slides or an overhead such as this. And I've seen others come to our assembly. And sometimes, and I say this carefully, I don't mean offense, it's some of the most senior brethren in the assembly are running the projector or setting it up. There are young people 13 years old that know more about projectors than I do. Why not get them to do it and say to them, there's Mr. Fleming, there's the missionary. Joe, you go and talk to him, get his slides, get him ready, show him how you can do it and find out what he needs. We've seen that done in some assemblies, and you know, those young people, as young as that, will be up afterwards talking to the missionary. They're watching those slides intently to be sure they're in focus. But at the same time, they're learning something from it. And if they get one upside down or out of order, it's a big discussion afterwards. Get them involved in it. And not only so, but I've often recommended to people coming through, missionaries with audiovisual equipment, don't go up and put your own equipment away afterwards. You go to the back and talk to people. We've got young people who put it away for you. These are just suggestions along the way. Involve the young people during the missionary visit. There are many other ways to involve them. I'm simply, for sake of time, making some suggestions. Maximize the missionary's contacts during his visit. That is, particularly with the young people. If the missionary is coming in early in the afternoon, perhaps the missionary family, it's nice to be able to take them to the nearest shopping mall if perhaps they need to pick things up. What's wrong with having one of the young people, past the age of being able to drive, of course, not 13, having a young person or even a young couple take them rather than perhaps one of the senior folks in the assembly? They want to visit with the elders in the assembly. They need to do that. But they desperately need the contact with young people so that it's informal. So that, again, pardon my own memory. I suppose I was 16 or 17. I had a driver's license, and we lived in Rutherford, New Jersey. Bill Spees was coming through on the way back to Africa. Now, remember, Bill's with the Lord now. He was significantly older than me. Even 10 years means a lot. If I'm 16, he was 26 plus, whatever. And he had to drive from New York to Philadelphia. There weren't the roads we had today. This was back, I suppose, in the 30s. And Bill said to me, "Jack, will you come with me and help me drive?" Now, the result was, of course, that he had hours with me in the car, plus the fact that I had to stay overnight in another assembly atmosphere in the Philadelphia area, go to the assembly meeting with him, and then come back on a bus or something. I didn't forget that for years. What a thrill it was for me. And I recall that when I was in Lawa visiting with Bill a year or two before he came home and subsequently passed away. Maximize the missionary's contacts in so many ways during the visit. Don't let him come through and only have contact with certain people. If you're inviting, if he's going out to a meal or something, how about their young people, the missionaries? If they're the same age as young people in the assembly, perhaps they can go skating together. I don't know about the South and skating, but well, after yesterday, yes, we'll have a skating rink. There are many other ways. Build a missions library. Now, I would not put that on there unless I put the next words and use it. I think some of the greatest untapped resources we have are libraries in our assembly buildings. Am I right? In some cases, it takes a really strong, capable, oriented person to make that library productive and used within the assembly. And one of the problems is those of us who love books and study have them at home. If we don't, we're not going to read them from the assembly library. But we can start to stimulate our young people. And I've made a list of some of them here. The Missions Magazine, of course, Missionary Prayer Handbook. Ken Fleming not only has a couple of chapters in Global Strategy, which is number 4, but he also wrote None Dare Say No. Missionary Biography, I could have put that in the plural. My shelf is about this long, and that isn't very much. Just on assembly missionary biography over the years, plus many, many others, perhaps this long. Tremendous missionary biography is available. Numerous texts on missionary call and principles, even by non-assembly writers. Our distinctive method of accepting that call, going out without being under the guidance of a board, is different. But there have been great men of God who have gone out, evangelical. Ken has mentioned some of that background, and I can profit by reading some of their sanctified and devoted lives for the Lord in years past. That the world may know. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this, but a few years ago, perhaps 6 or 7, I'm not sure now, Fred Catford in Britain was asked to try to write a compendium, if you like, of the total history of assembly missionary activity from the very inception up to the present day. Now, think of the problem. He's dealing with well over 100 years. He's dealing with all the countries of the world, wherever assembly missionaries have gone. He's dealing with missionaries from all the sending countries. The USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, of course, and two or three others like that. Basically, the Western civilization were the sending ones. And he completed that task through 10 volumes, That the World May Know, Volume 1, Volume 2, the 10th volume. He finished it, did the proofreading, and passed away. He's now with the Lord just a few months ago. A stupendous ending to his lifetime of service for the Lord. But they're expensive. They make a shelf like this. They are encyclopedic. That is, you don't just pick it up to read a thrilling story. Hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of names mentioned. Date, place, time, type of ministry. The political background of the country, the geography of the country. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of photographs, both full color from tourist boards in all these countries and some of the early black and whites of our early assembly missionaries. It is a tremendous book. If you have the Missionary Prayer Handbook, And if you turn from that to Know Your Missions in the Center of Missions magazine, and then you read the updated articles of Missions magazine, and then you have a set like That the World May Know, you've got a resource for what has been happening in Assembly Missions that I would say now we're probably the best documented evangelical mission in the world, I would think, because of that compilation. And it's no good sitting on the Assembly library shelf unless you can get your young people to dig into it, to read it, to do some studies from it. Why not have studies such as that? And then, of course, I've just put simply et cetera for more. Now, secondly, developing prospects. And here you notice I've put young people or older. We mentioned that earlier, that there will be those who are beginning to grow in the Lord. They're beginning to show some exercise. In essence, it's a continuation from what we've already discussed. But now you're seeing some whose life shows a commitment to the Lord. It shows growth. It shows exercise within the assembly. Now, somewhere along the line, it will be dawning upon us as older people, and perhaps on them, that perhaps the Lord has a call of service for them, which might involve the foreign field. It might involve the home field. It might involve staying in that assembly. But at least their lives show an interest and awareness. Now, these are prospects. Provide opportunities for special assembly services. Here I'm thinking of them. They're a little older now, perhaps. They can give reports at a Wednesday night prayer meeting on a mission field. We did that some time ago on one assembly where, oh, for 2 or 3 months, about every second Wednesday night, there'd be a 20-minute report on a mission field. But those giving the reports had spent hours in studying. They would put maps up, and they would have lists of the assembly missionaries, and they would be able to speak authoritatively of dates, of times, and of places. Provide special opportunities for association with missionary visitors. I've sort of touched on that earlier, but I'm thinking a bit more now, because such young people will come to the point, and I may be jumping ahead of myself, where they would really like to be able to sit down with a Brother Horton, perhaps, or a Brother Rainey, and in a non-obligatory way, to sit down and say, look, I'm not really at the point of thinking of going to the foreign field, but tell me more about what it's about. The personal interchange with the assembly or the assembly family. A young woman is a nurse and is thinking of maybe she should be open to a call to the field. And a missionary nurse comes back from the field. She can sit down, the two of them can sit down and talk. We must provide opportunities, not just to mix, but for personal sharing, consultation, and advice. And again, I mentioned what happened to me as a boy, where, unknown to me, Bill Spees had me to himself for several hours that afternoon as we drove from New York area to Philadelphia. Provide special opportunities for contacts with missionaries overseas. Well, and again, I'll touch on this later. How about writing to the missionaries? How about asking some of our younger brethren and sisters to write a follow-up letter to ministry that's sent to a missionary overseas? That does not remove the obligation of one of the elders, by the way. But wouldn't it be nice if some young person says, I don't really know you, but I'm interested in learning more about missionaries, and the assembly has asked me if I would kindly write and let you know such and such money is being sent, and I'd like to tell you about myself and my exercise. I'd like to hear from you. Provide opportunities for them to really have a contact with those overseas missionaries. And there are other ways of doing that, of course. Send or sponsor to a missions conference or retreat. I think of those put on by IT, those put on by other groups. Maybe it's more local than that. I know years ago in Valley Bible Chapel in New Jersey, we offered to pay 50% of the cost to get out to Wheaton or Urbana, whatever the case may be. We didn't pay at all. We offered to pay 50%. A goodly number of young people went. They joined with those from 3 or 4 other assemblies to make a full busload. And they had 3 or 4 days together, and it was a very wonderful thing. But the assembly said, look, we're interested in you. We will pay part of the fee. One could do more than that on other occasions. Give personal encouragement, coaching, counseling as well. We're getting now to sort of a Paul and Timothy situation. As a spiritual leader in the assembly, you're noticing such a one. Get to know them well. Get to be able to speak with them. Get to the point where they can come to you and say, Brother so-and-so, you know, I've really appreciated your spiritual leadership with me. I've come to you over many things. And I'm wondering somewhat about just where my life is going to lead me. But you don't even have to wait for that. You can be looking at them. Separate unto the ministry. Separate unto me, as the scripture says. And you can be going to them and saying, what have you thought about your life? Has a full-time service for the Lord in one capacity or other been something of an exercise to you? You'll be surprised sometimes at the answer you get. But it has to now be more personalized. That coaching, that counseling, that encouragement. Be faithful watching shepherds is really what I'm saying. I'm repeating the point. Consider a visit to a mission field. We have the privilege of going almost every year. I guess we skipped one year, Gene. I think we've done about five times, perhaps. And this year we're going again. It'll be the sixth or seventh, maybe. Going to Augusta for a week and sharing with some of the young people there in the Augusta Center for Biblical Study associated with the assembly there. And sometimes I've said to them, look, if you take a map of North and South America, North, Central, and South America, and you put a pin in the map at Augusta, Georgia. Now, take that pin across and put it at the bottom end of the United States, San Diego, if you will. Now, if you swing that line around, it'll cut right through, all the way through Mexico. It'll cut below Mexico. It'll cut in part of Central America, and it may even touch the shore of South America. You are no further away from there than you are from San Diego. I've changed that pin a few times for other places, so I may be wrong this morning, but try it. Now, there are many differences, of course. You don't go to a field unless arrangements have been made so that you're not a burden on somebody. But it's not impossible to arrange a brief visit to a mission field. When I was in Nyankundi that time, two young women turned up for about a week. They were in their junior or senior year just prior to getting their MDs. And at their own expense, they had flown out and just spent a week or 10 days at Nyankundi seeing what a mission hospital was like. Some of these young folks can do that. Perhaps their families helped, I don't know. But it's not beyond reason to have them actually see a mission field. I spoke to them, of course, and I said, what has that done for you? And they said, whatever we decide in life will never be quite the same. And I think anybody that's ever stepped on a foreign soil and seen some of the vision and the need there, you're never quite the same. And then my third point, answering questions and fears of prospects, and may I say to my chairman, I'm on time, we're all right. We'll get through. Answering questions and fears of prospects. Now, we cannot answer those here this morning. I do not have good answers. But I want to suggest to you the typical questions and fears buried within many people as they begin to grope with, is this the direction the Lord would take my life? How do I get there from here? I'll be talking about that this afternoon. What is each day really like? It's 9 o'clock in the morning. What will I really be doing? I'm a nurse. I'm going over there. What do I really do as a nurse? Will I be actually going up and down wards? What will I do? Will I be able to learn the language? Some languages are dreadfully difficult, particularly the Oriental languages, I'm sure. Will I be forgotten by those back home? Will my support keep coming? Will I be a failure? What happens then? I've nailed the flag to the mast. Now I'm 3,000 miles from home and everything's collapsed. How can I face that? Will I be a failure? How about accident and illness? What happens to my children? This, of course, brings up the whole question, which I wish we had a whole conference on, the MK, the missionary kid, the missionary child. It is a very vital, interesting question, a manifold subject with terrific pros, terrific cons, and it's worth the study. What happens to my children? What happens if my spiritual life wavers? You do not become more spiritual by stepping on the plane. And you're probably a little less spiritual after you step off on the other side and you face some of the problems. Isn't that so? The trip does not make the missionary. And what happens if my spirituality is up and down like this? It happens to us at home. But brethren, let me say, in all honesty, we can conceal it better at home. Now, I know that's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. And here I am alone on the mission field. I am looked for or perhaps I'm a younger person out with older missionaries. I'm under the eyes and gaze of nationals, of missionaries, all the time. And yet, my spirituality is at a low ebb. What about homesickness? What if I'm not accepted there? How can I be absolutely sure of the Lord's will before I go and while there? What happens if I have to come back? Can I handle the culture shock? I should have had those in reverse. Although, by the way, no. The reverse culture shock, if you've been a few years on the mission field, can be as great or greater than the culture shock going out. If you've been out there where the poverty is, where life is simple and life is real and life is earnest, and you come home and you're entertained in the homes of fellow Christians with the big swimming pools and the big cars, and it takes a while, and you feel guilty as you begin to accept it again. I raised very provocative questions this morning. Now, how are we going to get the answers? Here I am. Please answer me. Where can those answers come from? Assembly elders. They're the spiritual leaders. But dear friend, if you're like me, although I visited some mission fields, I have never been a missionary. And assembly elders are seeking before the Lord to raise, equip, command, and send out missionaries to a task they've never had. Therefore, their answers to these questions may at the most possibly be, to some extent, academic. Full-time workers in the homeland know a lot about what a life like this is like. Assembly missionary-oriented school. I just listed a few: Emmaus, Augusta, IT, Peterborough, which is really Kawartha Lakes Bible School in Peterborough, Ontario, talking to missionaries. They've gone out. They have had to answer those questions. Assembly missionary writings, which are manifold. And then I put that down twice by mistake. And then, of course, CMML. I don't mean that as the ultimate. It's not last, but by no means least. That isn't a thought at all. But at CMML, there is a repository of knowledge on missionary principles and practice and association with missionaries, which can be tremendously helpful. We'll enlarge on that this afternoon. We'll really take off from about this point. Thank you very much.